neurologist, every specialist, every doctor I've seen has said the same thing, and it is this. You are cleared.
This is Sunday night's main event.
In clear violation of the law.
With Jason Agnew.
I have a microphone and I can be louder than each and every one of you.
On TSN Radio.
I'm not finished with you!
Big E cashes in the bright lights of NXT 2.0 debut. And who would have thunk that a dark side of the ring about a plane ride from hell would have us all talking about helicoptering? Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sunday night's main event. We are Canada's wrestling radio program, powered by Great Lakes Beer, a fiercely independent brewery, and coming at you across the country on TSN Radio and the iHeartRadio Talk Network. My name is Jason Agnew, and this week on the program, we'll focus on both the dark and very, very, very bright side of the ring. First up, Dave Meltzer will join the show for his weekly segment to talk about the fallout from the plane ride from hell episode of Dark Side of the Ring and what this means for Tommy Dreamer, Ric Flair, and perhaps even Jim Ross. Then from the dark, we move to the light and the very, very bright debut of NXT 2.0. All the colors of the rainbow are out, as are a whole bunch of new players that debut in the NXT universe, including a second generation wrestler that you're not supposed to know is a second generation wrestler. I guess. Co-host of our NXT Talk podcast, Boris Aguilar, will join me later in the show to look at some of the new players and the new presentation of the Tuesday night show. We'll also take a look back at the glory days of NXT in our weekly edition of Turnbuckle Trivia. All of that is to come on the show, and do keep in mind, if you want wrestling radio podcasts each and every day, sign up for our Patreon service and get them sent right into your podcatcher. That's patreon.com/SNME Radio. You check out that. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Dave Meltzer, the editor of the Wrestling Observer Newsletter, will join me right here on Sunday night's main event.
Octo is an angry octopus. Usually he's quite surly.
What did you say to me?
But when he gets mad...
You ain't so smart, is you?
He becomes angry.
Go home and brush your sister's hair.
It's been said that his sour attitude is due to a slight disagreement with the Great Lakes Brewers.
Those guys better have eyes in the back of their head.
They said they would use 8 ingredients and Octo's beer would be 8%.
But it ain't!
Octo likes the number 8.
What's not to like about it?
The Brewers apologized for the 8, but that made Octo more irate.
Hey, you wanna go me?
Nevertheless, there's still something likable about Octo.
Your hat looks like a toilet.
Well, sort of.
Sit down!
Octopus wants to fight by Great Lakes Brewery.
That's right!
It's time for the Wrestling Observer Insider. With Dave Meltzer on Sunday night's main event.
Let's dive into the news of the week with Dave Meltzer of the Wrestling Observer Newsletter. And Dave, the news of the week, definitely not in-ring this week. I got tons of messages, as I'm sure you did, and everyone in the wrestling community is talking about Dark Side of the Ring. It is the second half of the third season that premiered this week about the plane ride from hell. I mean, I was already covering this industry when this happened. You, of course, were. You had a lot of details of it in the Observer at that time. And what I was watching this and I just kept thinking, how did all of this happen with the plane ride from hell with Vince McMahon on the plane? But now there's reports that he was or he wasn't there. And you had reported that he was not on that plane.
I look back, it's 20 years ago,
yeah.
19 years ago, actually. And when I watched it, and I, wrote about it without looking back to my old stuff. I basically wrote about the doc. And then I looked back at my report, which would have done the week that it happened, and I remember who I talked to, And the big thing was, is it got out of control because Vince was not on the plane. Now, here's the crazy thing. Number one, the producers had that. So I emailed a bunch of people, texted, messaged a few others, but a bunch of people who were on the flight that I know. And there was no consensus. I mean, it was essentially, there were four people who said he was not on the plane. There were three who said he was. And of the three who said he was, they weren't sure. But of the four who said he wasn't, they weren't completely sure either. Because here, the deal is there were so many different incidences on many different flights, including flights Vince was on. So they all kind of like, you know, you go to Europe a couple times a year, and this happens, and the flights kind of start blending together. It'd be like us on a certain drive. Do you remember on this drive who was in your car? You know, 20 years ago, when it was someone who was in your car most of the time, but maybe they weren't on a specific trip. And I think people kind of don't understand that. And so I think he wasn't on the plane, but there are certainly people who were on the plane, and I was not, who think he was. And there are certainly people who were pretty sure he wasn't. And it makes sense to me that he wasn't. And I don't know, because I know when I wrote it, you know, that was the big thing, is like, if Vince was on the plane, it probably wouldn't have gotten this out of control, even though there are flights that Vince was on that were out of control, but not to this degree. So, because there were a lot of flights that were out of control. And I mean, that's one of the reasons why you'll hear, like, Kurt Angle did a big interview about the thing with him and Vince and Undertaker and everything like that. And that was a different flight.
Mm-hmm.
He thought it was, but maybe to him, that was his plane ride from hell. You know, and some of the women were, you know, had a lot of stories. And, I mean, Maria Kanell said there were many flights like this. And I don't even think Maria, I don't even remember if Maria was even in the company in 2002, was she? It's 18, 19 years ago. I don't think so. And so this would be years later.
Yeah, it. I mean, I can see it all blurring together, especially because they're on the road so much and doing so many of those flights over on the private jet. But what has happened with this one now that it's been spotlighted by the producers of Dark Side of the Ring? I mean, this is definitely a noteworthy episode because it's had ramifications beyond the documentary. One in particular being Tommy Dreamer, who was on this episode of Dark Side of the Ring, essentially being the guy who was defending Ric Flair's actions, and he has now been suspended from Impact Wrestling. So, I mean, that is something that I guess in 2021 eyes Impact Wrestling felt they had to do.
Yeah, I mean, the fear of Tommy Dreamer was pretty high. But, you know, here's the thing, and it's, again, like, Dreamer does deserve the chance to explain, because it could be, number one, it could be he didn't even know about the stuff that Heidi Doyle said all the way, and he just thought it was Rick, you know, Rick's stuff that was, because Rick has done, you know, now everyone's gonna get mad at me, and I'm not defending Rick, okay, but it's like Rick has done things that to put on shows for guys that are relatively harmless. Now, if what Heidi Doyle said is in fact true, that certainly crosses that line and would not fit there. But like, I don't know that Dreamer was even on that flight. I think he was just talking about things in general, and I, you know, but I don't know. He needs to say something. But unfortunately, in this climate, it's like people are looking for a victim, and he, you know, he came off terrible. There's no doubt about it. He came off terrible. But was it in context? Was it out of context? I don't know. Was it just having warped values from being in wrestling for years, which a lot of people have? But you know, in this day and age, you cannot express that. And they are warped values. So there's a lot of still what I would call unanswered questions there. But Impact cut ties with them because I think it's just the pressure on the company that they felt that they had to. You know, so just like with others, you know, that have been in that situation. But it's a weird situation, that's for sure.
I think you bring up a valid point. I mean, we don't know, not that we're defending Tommy Dreamer, because we don't know the context of what context was given to Tommy Dreamer when he presented those answers.
Yeah,
and values do become extremely warped in pro wrestling. There's no doubt about that this was commonplace at that time and before.
Yeah. Well, he was from ECW, which was the craziest of... I mean, I grew up around... Well, I wouldn't call it crazy, but I think people today would. you know, situation and everything. But ECW was far beyond anything that I ECW at the hotel in Philadelphia, you know, and I was around at a couple of shows, but I was never part of, you know, obviously never part of that scene. But I mean, I heard the legends of that scene all the time, and it was insane, even, you know, more than anything that I have ever heard of in wrestling. And this was commonplace once a month, and probably in other cities as well, but Philadelphia was the one where it's like the scene was insane, and you know, that was his growing up in wrestling. And after that, probably WWE was tame. Mm. But, you know, it's just a weird, you know, I think people don't, you know, wrestling's always been a crazy world, but, you know, the entertainment world always was. That's the thing. And none of this is a defense of crossing a line that you know, I mean, when I saw Heidi Doyle on the show, I felt so, so, so horrible for her. And, but there's still, like, you know, I don't know. There's questions to be answered. Coachman made some tweets. I don't know if he was full of it. I don't know if he wasn't full of it. You know, he claimed that the women lied and that, you know, but it's Coachman. And I, you know, and then he said that he was on the flight. I mean, he was on the flight. Vince was not, which, again, is accurate to, as best I can tell. And then he said that the case was thrown out because there was no evidence, and I was always assuming, but I have no proof that it was settled out of court, as those things often were. And I think that that's what it was. But if it was settled, probably part of the settlement is you can't talk, and there, yep, she was talking. And that was the big question everyone had after. It's like, wait a minute, if they settled, she couldn't go on that show and talk, but she did. What's the story? And I've been asked that, like, over and over and over again, and I don't have an answer, because it's the same question I have. It's like, wait a minute. So there's something, there's a lot of stuff that we don't know. You know, I guess the key being the nature of the settlement, and, you know, and the other flight attendant would not talk. Obviously, she was not on the show. It was a very powerful, scary, bad incident. It was something that everybody should see, because, you know, I think it is important to know what wrestling was, but I think people are just going, oh, it was, you know, just a few guys, and it wasn't just a few guys. That's what wrestling was. Not everybody, but that's what wrestling was throughout its history. And people, you know, like I said, if you want to think that this is horrible, and it is, and you don't want to watch, you don't want to see this person, just remember that, like, almost everyone, I'll say almost everyone, but a large percentage of people from that era would be in that cloth. And we're seeing them all the time, you know. So it's, I don't know. It's very, you know, you look at a different era with different eyes, but still, under any eyes, the Heidi Doyle story is terrible.
Yeah. The person at the center of the Heidi Doyle story, aside from Heidi Doyle, is Ric Flair. Ric Flair has had national ads pulled. Now, Ric Flair, who we all thought was making his way towards AEW, that seems like a really bad idea if that were to happen right now.
Agreed. If he was going to come in with Andrade and kind of looked like it was being set up, even though he had denied it, it would be a very bad idea right now. I mean, the risks would be too high, way too high. It just would not be a good idea to do that.
This is an interesting scenario for the producers of Dark Side of the Ring. Clearly, they have made headlines with their show in season three now.
We're in season three.
But who out there, aside from Jim Cornette and Vince Russo, wants to talk to anyone from Dark Side of the Ring going forward for season four?
There will always be some, but it will obviously with two people. Well, Rick was not even on the piece.
No.
And obviously Rick would have been asked to be on the piece and would have turned it down. With Dreamer's the first, like, nobody's really had any repercussions. Some people have been looked on really bad. Some people have been looked on really good coming off of these shows. But Dreamer is the first with, you know, basically, you know, his career is shot. Yeah. I don't know if it's shot forever. But it could be, because people have long memories and everything. And it's like, is it worth, you know, it's not. And that's yes, it's going to be difficult. I could see Jim Ross, who's been on many, many of these pieces, mm-hmm, you know, after this one, going like, you know, this is not, you know, it's not worth the risk of the negativity coming out of it, because he got negativity too. Not enough that it's going to cost him his job. But with Dreamer, yeah, it cost him his job, and he was regularly wrestling, and he's been part of the business for decades. And yeah, it's something you got to look at. You know, I mean, people go, you know, like, don't say anything stupid, and that is your answer. But sometimes you do, and sometimes, you know, and again, I not knowing everything, I don't want to either completely throw Dreamer under the bus, nor do I at all want to absolve him, because it was, you know, it's like if he said something based on, like, knowing the whole story and still said that, that was really bad. You know, I mean, that's, you know, it's, you can't do Rick just having fun if you have read the lawsuit or remember the lawsuit, which is probably a better one, or saw her, you know, me and more saw her. So it's a really... you know, it's a sorted issue.
Dave, you've appeared numerous times. So does this change your opinion on the series? And when they call you, which inevitably they will call you for season 4, do you do the interview?
It depends on the subject, but I would say yes.
Okay.
But that might be, no, you know what? It depends on the subject, but the problem is, and it's not on them, I like to think that I would not have a value structure that is so bad that would lead to this. But at the same time, I know people are going to take little snippets out of context. Not on that show, but like if it was a long interview and it was people who I did not trust, I would certainly say no. But again, like with the stuff that I've been on many episodes.
Yeah, you have. They've portrayed you very well.
I've been on many episodes of that, and I have never been taken out of context. I've never looked and gone, I didn't really mean this. I've never been taken out of context. And given that, so when I think about Dreamer, it's like, you know, I've never been taken out of context. He may not have been, and that's pretty bad, and that's why he's taking the hit right now.
That in itself is an interesting revelation. All right, let's move along from Dark Side of the Ring. Let's talk about Andrew Yang. So he tweeted out this week, had a call with Department of Labor. If you are a current or former WWE performer who feels you were misclassified as an independent contractor, contact, and he puts up another Twitter address, and let's get you what Vince owes you. Been a long time coming, but this storyline is real. What merit is there to what Andrew Yang has teased in the past and is now coming back to?
I don't know, but the guy he mentioned was a lawyer named Lucas Middlebrook.
Mm-hmm.
Lucas Middlebrook, I know, not personally, but I know that he represented Leslie Smith against UFC on the independent contractor versus employee thing, and Nick Diaz against the Nevada Commission. He is a well-known and well-respected lawyer. This is what one of the things I surmise is, you know, he's been around fighters, and, you know, a lot of people think that fighters have been abused financially, and I would agree. I think that they've never gotten their fair share from UFC. I think they did get their fair share in the early days when the company was engrossing a lot of money and was losing money. They did get their fair share. Now they don't get close to their fair share. Nor do WWE performers. They don't get close to their fair share, and that's one of the reasons the profit margins of these two companies are through the roof, because they don't pay what they should, what you would get if you were, you know, in any other pro wrestling company, what you would get if you were in any other MMA company. You don't get what you would get by percentage if you were in any other soccer, baseball, football, whatever, right? You know, hockey. And I think WWE, when it comes to employee versus independent contractor, they are stronger if you look at things as employee than UFC. But there are similarities, and I'm not sure that Middlebrook isn't looking to get WWE performers classified as employees, and they should be. And doing that, it also sets the precedent, and then he can go after UFC on the same thing with the precedent set of WWE. I think that's a strategy. When I looked at it, that's a strategy that I think makes sense, and it's an interesting one. And again, you know, people have challenged it, but they've been thrown out on statute of limitations before. But if you look, I mean, WWE wrestlers, they're employees. You can't go, like, if I'm an independent contractor and you know, like, I'm a plumber and I do your house, I can also do your friend's house.
Yep.
With these guys, they can't take out dates on their off dates. They can't set up their own schedule. They can't get their own endorsements, which is a real key. And even UFC fighters can get their own endorsements. They just can't use them on fight week, but they can get them for you know, like, you don't have to be, you know, Vince has to approve everything that you do. You can't even do a movie without WWE approving it. That's an employee.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, there's something to it. Let's take a look at actually stuff that happened in-ring this week. NXT, I mean, they call it 2.0. It's much beyond that, but nonetheless. NXT 2.0, what did you think of the presentation, Dave? It is a dramatic difference. Bright, bright, bright.
I mean, the look is better. There's no doubt about that. I think that the look was really dragging down the old show. And as far as, you know, it's a pivot. We're going to have younger guys, better athletes, bigger guys, guys that they think have more potential for the main roster. And you know what? That's probably what NXT should be, really. That's what it was designed to be at first, and then it pivoted. What happened, and this is the story, you know, is that what happened was Ring of Honor, when the Young Bucks and Cody and those guys were there, you know, Ring of Honor started getting really popular, and Triple H decided that they were, you know, and Vince and all of them, they decided they were getting too popular. So what do? You take their top guys. So they got guys, and then they started raiding all the independents because the independent scene was getting popular, and we're going to take that spot, that niche that these people are making money with, of work rate wrestling. We're going to give the people, all those people who complain that WWE's wrestling isn't as good, we're going to give them the, you know, really good wrestling. And that's what they tried to do. And, you know, and combine it with developmental. What happened was, is that the athletes that WWE would sign could not wrestle nearly as good as these guys who've been wrestling for 10 years, 12 years, and are really good at it. And so they kind of got lost in the shuffle, and they fell behind. And I think it was kind of probably depressing where these guys are coming in, you know, and they're great at their sport, or good at their sport. And then they come in and they're seeing these guys who are so much better than them. And it number one, they're not getting the ring time. And number two, it's kind of like a shock. And they may not progress as well because of that. And now it's kind of like, we need to get these guys to progress. So based on, you know, the NXT was originally, this whole concept was originated by Jim Cornette and Jim Ross with OVW years ago. We got to do a developmental system, and that's what produced Lesnar and Angle and John Cena and Randy Orton and that whole, Dave Bautista, that whole generation of guys that carried the company. And then, you know, again, it got away from that to being this thing that produced some of the best shows that we've ever seen. And you know, that is different. And I'm not saying, and it's not necessarily one's right or wrong, but the powers that be, and there's a lot of politics that are going on there. And believe me, losing the Wednesday Night War is the, you know, no matter what anyone will say, that's the key to all this. It's like he went in there, and he was supposed to knock out AEW, and now AEW's out here head-to-head with Raw and you know, beating Raw the last 2 weeks as far as same-day viewing goes, or same-day 18 to 49 viewing, you know, the how the chart is labeled, you know, for the week, AEW is ahead of Raw, which nobody ever thought was possible. I guess some people did, but and as some people could see it coming, but still, it didn't happen yet, but it happened. It has happened now. And it's kind of an embarrassment. You're a company 13 times the size of the other company, and somehow they're beating you. And in some metrics, and the one that everyone looks at the most. And you know, what are you going to say to stockholders in a couple weeks? And you know, Levesque's job was to put them out of business, and it didn't work.
Yeah, they're definitely competing now. Dave, we got to go, but two things before we do here, just quickly. First of all, we had the cash-in for Big E on Monday. Is this, and then, you know, Reigns is going to appear on Raw. We just talked about AEW ratings that are doing fairly well. Is this WWE pushing the panic button?
I don't want to say pushing the panic button, but it's absolutely, the last week was a complete reaction. Because obviously they were going to do a tag team title match as the main event, and then the ratings come in, and then the next day they change the whole card and tell, you know, the day of the show, they're all but telling you Big E's going to win the championship.
Yep.
Because Big E can't not win. Like, there are guys like Baron Corbin or Aaron Stevens or whatever. There are guys who can got that briefcase, or Otis, or The Miz. Although Miz did win, which was scary. But there are guys who have the briefcase that cannot win and be fine. Big E would kill him not to win. Of course, I'm not sure every fan knew that, but they did know there was going to be a cash-in, and a cash-in's a real big deal. And not just a cash-in. You're going to get Lashley and Orton you're getting a championship, and they don't do championship matches on TV every week. So, yes. That was the big thing. That was the reaction. And then this week, they're bringing their heaviest hitter, which is Roman Reigns, the biggest star in the company, biggest full-time star anyway. I mean, Cena's still the biggest star, but they bring in the biggest full-time star in. And that's the reaction. And if AEW also, on Wednesday, they've got arguably their strongest Dynamite ever. I mean, this is a big, big week for AEW. And so, yeah, I almost think AEW's favored this week. And then after that, I mean, WWE still should win more weeks than not. But, when the tide turns, one group, the thing is, one group has momentum and the other group doesn't have momentum. And that's a big thing, too.
One thing that happened this week, and our final topic here, it was outside of WWE and AEW, but it was TMZ, and I've seen WWE do this before. Paul Heyman appears on TMZ talking about Gable Steveson. Now, this is very interesting to me, as Paul Heyman is currently torn between Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns, and all things to me point that he is going to be out from managing either one of those or being their advocates. Is this the next big thing for Paul Heyman?
I'm sure for his longevity, he's looked at this since Gable Steveson was a junior in high school and saw that. And then, the guy who you kind of recognize as a junior in high school who, might end up being a national champion, ends up winning the gold medal, you know what I mean, in incredible fashion. Everything fell into play, but they're very close. Gable Steveson's dream is to be managed by Paul Heyman like his hero Brock Lesnar was. So it could happen. But, the guy has just, there is so much to this one. There's so many unknowns. Will he take to pro wrestling? Not everyone does. He's going to train as a pro wrestler and appear on WWE television this year while at the same time going for the NCAA championship, which is a grind. Nobody has ever tried that. No normal person could do that. Now, he's not a normal person, so maybe he'll be able to. But after he won the gold medal, the NCAA title, it's like all you can do is lose. If you win, it's like, well, you're the gold medalist. Of course, you should beat all the college wrestlers. But all he can do is not win,
yeah,
because winning is expected. So it's almost like from that standpoint, you've got all of these guys shooting to win, to beat the gold medalist, who is distracted because he's training pro wrestling. They're setting up a private camp just for him. He's not going to Orlando, or he may go to Orlando some weekends, but generally speaking, he's not. They're right off campus, they're setting up a private camp for Gable Steveson to train him one-on-one to be a pro wrestler, which they have never done with anyone before. And he's going, like I said, he's going. And then, after the college season's over, he's going to WWE, and he may bypass NXT. And I think that with the amount of money that his contract is, they probably want him to bypass NXT. But bypassing NXT, it's like, it's one thing in Japan where the young lions start on the card and they do, 8-minute or 10-minute matches. In the opening match, and no one expects them to look good, and they usually look good. This is like someone who's going to be out there with, guys like Dolph Ziggler and Robert Roode, again, I'm just throwing out normal guys on the roster that aren't even like the biggest stars that are freaking really good. And you're going to bring this guy in, and he's going to be above all of them. And it's not like he made his name in the 80s like Bill Goldberg did, where you can survive looking bad. He's going to have the microscope on him. I mean, poor Dominic Mysterio, all I hear about is how bad he is. And it's like, Dominic Mysterio is great for his level of experience. And people resent him, oh, it's because of his father, which of course it is. But he's great for his level of experience, and people crap on him. And Gable, the idea that Gable in a year will be as good as Dominic. I mean, you know, maybe he will, but he probably won't. And to go in there and, he's got pressure on him that I don't think he even probably fully grasps.
Dave, we've kept you long this week. Appreciate the insight. Of course, people can subscribe to everything that you do and hear you all the time at WrestlingObserver.com. And if they do that, they have access to the archives as well, right? So they could go back and read about the plane ride from hell in your archives.
Yeah, they can read the story from the week that it came out, and they can read the story about the lawsuit when it came out, because I covered that as well.
Yeah. Yep.
And and the 1997 Survivor Series and every WrestleMania 17 and All In and all of these game changing events in pro wrestling history.
Yeah, there's a lot there. WrestlingObserver.com is where you can subscribe to Dave, and we just give you tidbits every week here on Sunday Night's Main Event. We'll do that next week, Dave, as we preview the WWE pay per view. Same time, same place.
Have a great week.
You too. Hey, we got to take a break. We went a little long there with Dave, but when we come back, turnbuckle trivia time. And as NXT has a new coat of paints, so many colors, we will talk about the golden era of NXT. The black and yellow brand is the focus next for turnbuckle trivia. And then Boris Aguilar of our NXT Talk podcast will be in at the end of the show to talk about the fresh coat of paints that we saw this week. Taking a break, Sunday Night's Main Event is what you're listening to.
But I see your true colors shining through.
If you like Dave Meltzer interview segments, you'll love WrestlingObserver.com. WrestlingObserver.com is your place for the latest pro wrestling and mixed martial arts news 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Subscribers have access to hundreds of back issues of Dave's Wrestling Observer newsletter, plus daily podcasts, including a library of over 9,000 shows dating back to 2005. Check it out today, WrestlingObserver.com.
It's time for everyone's favorite game show.
All I do is win, 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 no matter what.
Go one-on-one and get it done. Sunday Night's Main Event presents...
Everybody hands go up!
Turnbuckle Trivia.
And they stay there! And they say yeah! And they stay there!
Turnbuckle Trivia time here on Sunday Night's Main Event. We have two patrons lined up to play the game. Savvy veterans of the game they are. First of all, Ian is on the line from Kitchener. Hello, Ian.
Hello.
You will be playing against Dan from Toronto. How's it going, Dan?
No, it's going great.
Amazing.
Pleasure to take on my opponent, Ian from Kitchener.
All right, here we go, guys. Now, this week, we're not going to do Dark Side of the Ring trivia and Plane Ride from Hell, even though it's probably the most relevant news topic. But I was all set to do a big review on the new NXT. And that's what we're going to do in the next segment with our pal Boris from NXT Talk. And I thought I would go back to what I guess WWE considers NXT 1.0 for this trivia. So let's see what you remember from the golden years of NXT. Ian, your player one. Dan, your player two. Let's get into it. With Big E, Ian, winning the championship this past Monday on Raw, much has been made of him being the second NXT champion, but who was the first?
Bo Dallas?
It was not. It was Seth Rollins was the first champion. Now, Dan, Seth won a tournament to get that title. What current WWE talent did he defeat in the final?
Oh, current.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Baron Corbin?
It was not Baron Corbin. That's a pretty good guess. Actually, before the time of Baron Corbin, it was Jinder Mahal, believe it or not.
Oh, wow.
Back to you, Ian. On February 27th, 2014, NXT had their first pay-per-view event. What was it called?
Takeover?
That's a great guess. And you know what? The second one was. But the first one was called Arrival. And that's what I was looking for. Dan, over to you for this next one. On that show, so on Arrival, February 27, 2014, there was a ladder match for the NXT title. Who was crowned champion?
Sami Zayn?
It was not. It was Neville who defeated Bo Dallas on that show. All right, still 0-0, still sitting at a tie. Back to you, Ian. this is tough. Who were the first NXT tag team champions? I will take either the name of the tag team or the name of the guys themselves.
Was it Harper and Rowan?
That is a great guess. I actually believe that the Wyatt family was number two, but the first were called the British Invasion, and it was Neville and Oliver Gray, which, honestly, no recollection of. Dan, over to you. Who currently holds the record for longest cumulative reign as NXT Tag Team Champions? So combined reigns here is what we're talking about. Who's held it the longest? Tag team.
Boy, you're catching me swinging here with these 1.0 questions.
You got it.
Where are these Braun Breaker questions? Damn it. who are those doofs Alexa Bliss used to... taking the L.
So you're thinking of Buddy Murphy and, I can't even remember the other name. We called them the Dubstep Cowboys back in the day.
I mean, it's not them. But.
Incorrect. Yeah. It's actually, at 606 days, the Undisputed Era. And number two was the Ascension. But Undisputed Era, number one. All right, we're learning here. We're learning, Ian. Now, I'm going to put this out here graciously because this is how I wrote the question. We all remember Paige as the first NXT Women's Champion. I thought that was too easy. So she won a tournament in 2013. Who did she defeat in the finals?
Charlotte?
Great guess. Incorrect, though. Emma, of all people. Emma, she defeated. And that might have been when Emma had the really fun bubbles gimmick in NXT, when she seemed to be great, and wow, did they screw that up. Dan, over to you. Paige then vacated the title when she was called up to the main roster. Who won an 8-woman tournament to pick up the next title? The NXT women's title. So who won that tournament after Paige vacated it?
Sasha Banks?
Incorrect. This one Ian would have got right because it was Charlotte. All right, guys. Let's not go 0 for 0 here, okay? Or 0 for 10, I guess. Right now it is 0-0. And Ian, here is your final question. By combined reigns, who has held the NXT Women's Championship the longest?
Asuka?
I believe she's actually number two. But number one is Shayna Baszler, who has held it the longest. That means, Dan, if you get this, you have a dramatic 1-0 win, or it's 0-0, and I can't believe I'm going to say this, but that means nobody gets a prize. Dan, to you, William Regal, one of our favorite parts of NXT as the GM. He's been fantastic since 2014. What's his real name?
Steven Regal? No, wait, that doesn't make any sense. I'm wrong, obviously, because I said that out loud, but...
Darren Matthews is the correct answer. Never before. I do not believe we have ever gone 0-0. Guys?
Amazing.
You,
NXT 0.0, baby!
I'm going to be nice. We're going to do a tiebreaker. Someone is getting this T-shirt. All right.
Enhancement talent.
It should be a T-shirt of shame, though. So let's see who wins the T-shirt of shame from BallerGear.ca. All right, guys. We're going to do this with the help of editing. I'm going to ask you individually this numerical question, and we're going to see who gets the win. The question is, as of today, how many days has William Regal been GM of NXT? It's closest to without going over. And Ian, your guess was?
1,200.
And Dan, your guess was?
2,400.
1,200 and 2,400 are the guesses. With that in mind, William Regal has been GM since 2014, as I stated, and 2,788. That means congratulations, Dan. In a 0-0 game, you sneak by, and I'm going to get you a T-shirt of shame from BallerGear.ca. All right, Dan?
Yeah, I'm the Von Wagner of this NXT. Walking in, no big win, just a big win coming out. You know who I am. Look out, savvy veterans.
Okay.
Wow.
He had it ready, and he had it ready.
Wow.
Guys, thank you very much for playing the game. Of course, these guys will both be back for the Turnbuckle Trivia Tournament, but there is space to still get in if you haven't played as of yet. Become a patron and do better than 0-0 and win the pity t-shirt. We're going to take a break. We are going to be back, and Boris from NXT Talk is next to talk about NXT 2.0, because clearly we don't know much about NXT 1.0. Stick with us on Sunday night's main event.
I'm in the Arsenal, and I'm with Baller Gear.
Hi, I'm Chad Jeter, and I'm with Baller Gear.
I'm Ricky Collins Jr., and I'm with Baller Gear.
Baller Gear is the official home for the CG brand. 39 Sack, Root Demons, Shaq One, Manny Show, Front Happy Collections, and more. We're also the newest home for the official tees from SNME Radio. Check out the selection of tees today at ballergear.ca.
I'm Boris Aguilar.
And I'm Matthew Ederer.
And we're still the Young Guns.
Even though, mathematically speaking, we aren't getting younger.
Every Wednesday morning, you can wake up to our show on the Sunday Night's Main Event Patreon feed.
That show is NXT Talk, where we talk about NXT. We also rate every match and rant about the wrestling world.
The show is NXT Talk, and you can find it on SNME Radio's Patreon feed. That's patreon.com/SNME Radio.
Sunday night's main event is crowdfunded. You can support the show by joining our Patreon. Just visit patreon.com/SNME Radio. Patreon.com/SNME Radio.
Have you ever heard the wolf cry to the blue corn moon? Or ask the grinning bobcat why he grinned? Can you sing with all the voices of the mountain? Can you paint with all the colors of the wind? Can you paint with all the colors of the wind?
Welcome back to Sunday night's main event. Well, I can safely say I've never played Colors of the Wind on the show before, but I felt it appropriate because all the colors of the rainbow were involved in the broadcast on Tuesday night of the brand new NXT. WWE is calling this NXT 2.0, which I kind of take offense to because it's clearly at least 3.0. Joining me to chat about this particular show and the rebranding of the what used to be the gold and black brand is Boris Aguilar of our NXT Talk podcast. Boris, you guys now need a new logo that just has, just take a whole bunch of paint and just throw it at three letters, okay?
That's exactly what I plan to do and have done. It's, I call it the Roy G. Biv brand now.
The Roy G. Biv? I'm not, I don't even know that reference. Is that an artist reference?
The Colors of the Rainbow.
I see. All right, listen, I'm one who, you know, NXT, let's talk about, you know, the before era right here. Like, before going into this change, I do have to say, the product felt like an afterthought ever since it moved nights and was not direct competition for Dynamite, didn't you think?
100%. You know that they essentially admitted defeat and it wasn't the same. You know, every episode seemed disconnected and disjointed with the previous one. We literally saw some debuts on the main roster, for example, like Tegan Nox, right after hyping up a huge comeback. They take her that same night, basically, and move her to SmackDown. It just completely seemed like an afterthought, 100%, you know, just waiting for the relaunch that happened this past week.
Yeah, and then they forgot her on SmackDown as well. But that's a whole nother story about what's going on there. So here's what NXT has done. I mean, if you didn't see it, go check it out because you'll definitely... You know what? To turn this on, Boris, I don't even think I would know it was NXT because it is such a drastic difference. Everywhere there was darkness, there is now light. And this is... This, to me, is a bit of an overcorrection because you're seeing the back of a very small center that they are performing in.
Yeah, it honestly feels like we're watching OVW or FCW with just the size, you know, and what's interesting, though, is, you know, the casual fan is going to watch this and say, why am I watching the minor leagues? You know, it's us wrestling fans, people who listen to this show, people who read The Observer, who actually know what's going on and are going to give it a chance. But I really don't think that the casual fan is going to give this much of a chance just because of the amateur feel to the show.
Yeah, it felt amateur for a few reasons to me. I felt like, now maybe it was because there was so much done in one episode. Like, this was just a complete overhaul with so many new debuts. In my opinion, I think it was a mistake to put so many people out there in one episode because I'm full on confused. Too many introductions for me.
Yeah, 100%. There were six debuts overall in 2 hours. Six debuts in 2 hours. Like, that's just unreal for me. Like, that's crazy. And even some of the debuts just didn't really make sense. And it was too much happening. There was too much kind of, you know, this is the new NXT and let's forget about everything else. And I really felt like, you know, over the next few weeks, they're going to end certain storylines to completely have this refresh.
I also felt like, along with the darkness to light, musically, they went from metal to hip hop. Now this, to me, and I'm wondering how much of this is what they believe to be success of Hit Row, because it feels like this brand is made to be the Hit Row brand.
Oh, yeah. I was actually just thinking that. Like, it kind of seems like Vince McMahon and Kevin Dunn and Bruce Pritchard went into a room and said, what do the kids listen to and what do the kids... You know, they like colors. Let's throw all the paint on our new logo. You know, they like this hip hop. Let's have this new song with Wally and whomever, right? Like, I don't know. It just seems too forced. And that was the beauty of NXT. It just wasn't forced. Things just naturally happen, especially NXT 1, like the real NXT 2.0. When it started airing on the network, everything just felt natural. But now everything feels like it's just being forced. Even like we already talked about these debuts, they just seem so forced. Even the title match just seems so forced. The wedding, forced. Everything just feels so forced and seems like very WWE, like telling us what we want to watch, telling us what we like, what we don't like and whatnot. It just seems too much right now and so far away from the original vision of NXT.
I think what they may end up doing here is alienating the core audience that watched NXT and instead try to get those common fans watching. And I think you're right. I don't know if they're going to come over. Let me throw it to you this way. I mean, you and I, sure, we're broadcasting across Canada and the world via online, but we both live in Toronto. We've grown up in Toronto. And it's like, Toronto is what's known as a major league city, and we support the Jays, we support the Leafs, we support the Raptors. There's other teams here. There's the Argos, but you know what the Argos are not? They're not an NFL team, and you know who goes to Argos games? No one. Along with that, you got the Marlies. They're here. They're the Leafs minor league club, but who goes? Really not many people, because it's not major leagues. And I feel like the regular WWE fan will have that mentality. They want WWE. They want big. They want fireworks. They want larger-than-life stars. And it's really tough to be a larger-than-life star when you're in a very small arena.
Oh, I think that is the best way to put it. I think that the Toronto comparison is the best way, because Toronto wants the number one sports league. They want the major leagues. They don't really care about the leagues under that. And that's exactly what this feels like now. It's like they're flat out saying, this is not main roster. This is developmental. You know, hopefully you like us, but it just seems so disconnected and disjointed. And you know, we are going to be watching this almost because we're forced to, but I can't picture, you know, random Joe, you know, on his couch on Tuesday, flipping the channels, sees this and says, ooh, this piques my interest.
I don't think so either. And I think the audience that they did have was that audience that was also watching Ring of Honor, AEW, and all of those. And they managed to find another audience there. So it'll be curious to see if ratings go up or go down. Because, I mean, I could actually argue go down unless those people just do stay there because they're curious to see the next stars. Now, one of the people that was thrown right into our face right off the beginning of this show was Bron Breakker. Now, Boris, last week on this show, I told everyone that this guy's name, it's Bronson Reichsteiner. This is the son of Rick Steiner, and they had given him the name, reported name, of Rex Steiner. And I'm not sure if I said it on the air or off the air, but I looked at it and I'm like, that is a perfect name. That, because it's not Rick, it's Rex. You add Steiner in there. Everyone remembers the Steiner brothers. Great runs in WCW. Questionable runs in WWE. Now, I just don't understand why not only have you got away from this wrestling heritage, but along with that, you've added another Braun. And granted, I know Braun Strowman is no longer there. And I know that the name is spelt differently. And yes, I know it's from his actual real name, but that's never stopped WWE from changing anyone's name before. This name is beyond making zero sense for me.
Honestly, this is my biggest issue right now with WWE. It's as if they want us to not know that he is the son of Rick Steiner. It's as if they don't want to build a new wrestling family or a wrestling dynasty because, you know, you have the Rome, like you have the Inouye family right now, right? So we're not allowed to have anyone else but them. So what are we going to do? We're going to change this guy's name to something absolutely different. Braun Breaker with two K's. We got to remember it's with two K's. To me, it makes no sense. Like, what's the most natural way of getting someone over? You know, talking about their family, talking about their history, talking about the heritage and whatnot. But now you're completely trying to create this new star from scratch when you had this natural storyline, this natural progression. And to me, it just seems like they honestly do not want anyone to be related to anybody. Like, I am shocked at this point that Dominic Mysterio has the name Dominic Mysterio.
Yeah.
But, you know, can you imagine if Brett and Owen were going to come through the developmental right now, they'd be called, you know,
the lungs. God,
what? Yeah.
Not the hearts. They're the lungs.
Yeah. But it's just so crazy.
Also, Boris, I mean, okay. If, let me ask you this, because this is who I knew who Braun Breaker slash Bronson Reichsteiner slash Rex Steiner was. And I saw this guy, and when the name changed, if I'm a casual WWE fan and if I hear a rumor of this guy being related to, or just who does this guy remind you of? If you remove the Steiner reference, because there's one person that came to mind for me, and it's not a good comparison.
Ooh.
Is this not, to me, Mojo Rawley 2.0?
Oh, my God. I didn't even think about that. And now thinking of the way he acted, his appearance, the personality, that's exactly what they're going for. Damn.
That's not good.
No, not at all, because that worked out so great the first time around.
So, I mean, they've clearly put the push on this guy. So let's talk about him. We see him at the beginning. I didn't understand why he went in and beat LA Knight. And then you also had LA Knight that was supposed to be in the main event too, doesn't win the main. But I can tell you, as they push forward to youth, the last person I expected to be holding the NXT title at the end of this broadcast was Tommaso Ciampa. What is happening with the guy who looks 50 holding this title?
I think this is where the booking and the overall look and feel and NXT 2.0 is going to really start messing with us. Tommaso Ciampa, I think they're going to treat him like a coach. I think they're going to treat him as the veteran, as the Bull Durham for that baseball reference okay. That no one's except you and I are going to get.
Okay, yeah.
You know? So I think they're going to treat him like that, and that's why they gave him the belt. But as you're literally telling everybody, this is now the youth movement. You give the guy that looks 50 but is only 36 that title. It's the optics, the message, it's clashing. And look, I'm a huge fan of Ciampa having that title, but it just seems really weird that, you know, after weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks of telling us that this is going to be new and different and, you know, that you got the youth movement, you give it to that guy.
Or let me throw this, and I'm just spitballing here. Is this given to Ciampa so that Steiner can beat him? And essentially Ciampa losing Goldie, which was very, very much the old brand. Is this the death of that brand and the full-on passing of the so-called torch by Steiner defeating him for this?
It's funny that you bring that up, because I was thinking about this after we recorded NXT Talk. I think Ciampa is the last champion of that era. Him and Gargano, I think, are the only two people who still are around from that era of NXT. So, you know, it kind of does feel like this is going to be the burial of that entire class that came before them. And it's just like, it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate that WWE sacrifices their own roster and people's careers like this. But, you know, at this point, it's par for course for WWE, and I really don't know what the plan is. And, you know, Ridge Holland, I thought he was going to be the main guy.
Mm-hmm.
He even beats up Kyle O'Reilly and yet isn't put in the match. You had Bron Breakker, who beat LA Knight. Why didn't he go on the mic and say, "I beat you, I'm taking your spot"?
Yeah, like, instead, there was just so much weirdness. I agree. And instead, it's Von Wagner debuting in the main event out of nowhere. Now, this is a legacy that I guess we don't really need to visit here, but he's the son of Bo Beverly, back from the Beverly Brothers in the WWF days. To me, this guy, here's the vibe I got. Do you know who Richard Keel is?
I can't recall.
Richard Keel is the guy who played Jaws in the Bond films, the henchman. And for our reference, he was also in Happy Gilmore as the giant with the nail in his head. I feel like this dude could be Richard Keel's son. You're never going to look at him the same again now that I've said this, by the way.
I know, you just completely ruined him for me. But he just seems so out of place. Like, why would you do this to someone? Why would you put someone in the main event of a title match on the debut episode of this new brand, for lack of a better term, and it's his first televised match, so let's just put him in the main event. It's a title match with three veterans. Good luck.
And he doesn't win.
Yep. On top of it all. Or he doesn't even take the pin. It's LA Knight who had like the worst night humanly possible.
Which is funny, because I looked at who was in that title match and I had picked LA Knight as the guy to win and get into this new NXT, because I'm like, if Vince looks at these four guys, LA Knight's the guy.
Yep. And people were also talking Pete Dunne, because it was announced earlier that night that he did resign. Yeah. So, you know, it was the last person who I would have thought would win the match did, to be honest.
I found that the whole show kind of came across as I spent a few bucks and I went to an indie show, and I went there to see maybe a couple people that I know on the card. And then there's all these other people who have overwhelming gimmicks to try to get themselves over.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think that's exactly what the par for course is right now. That's exactly what it's going to feel like. You're going to have your Ciampas, you're going to have your Garganos, who knows for how much longer. But the rest of the show is honestly just going to be these people trying new stuff to see what sticks. And I have a feeling that that's what this era of NXT is going to bring us. They're literally going to throw a bunch of stuff at the wall and see what sticks.
Before we go, I guess we should touch on the wedding. I thought it was, we've said, forced and overdone. I thought those are two great words for this. I didn't understand the Andre Chase thing. I didn't understand Beth Phoenix. That made zero sense. Sure, it was a follow-up on a storyline. If you like these characters, I guess you like this. And occasionally a wrestling wedding does tend to do well ratings-wise, but this... I don't understand how you launch I don't understand how you launch a new brand of young guys that's supposed to be more WWE, and you put a wedding on it. But I guess when you say more WWE and add the wedding, that does make complete sense. So I'll contradict myself. Did you care for this at all?
I was so torn. I didn't. I've never been a fan of this story to begin with, so my expectations were already really low. And somehow, Jason, it didn't even meet my low expectations. Like, it was just so bad. It just seemed like a horrible SNL skit gone wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. That is a good way of putting it. All right, listen, if you want to hear Boris and his pal Matt break this whole episode down, it's available right now for patrons, patreon.com/SNME Radio. I say it all the time. These guys are great. They do NXT Talk each and every week. We are forcing them to continue on with NXT 2.0 Talk. They will have a new logo, but sign up to the patron. Get Boris and Matthew each and every week and all of our daily podcasts. We got to say goodbye for those of you on the radio. show. For those of you in the free podcast, bye-bye. For patrons, Boris and I are going to continue chatting. We've got a whole bunch to cover this week. Probably some Dark Side of the Ring. Probably some Blue Jays, to be honest with you. We will do that when we come back. For all of you on the radio and regular podcast, bye-bye. We'll talk to you next week. Same time, same place on Sunday night's main event. Don't you dare miss it.